Good morning. I'll be presenting on some research we did trialing legumes for soil improvement in southern Africa. This research that I'll be presenting this morning was kind of a precursor to a larger project where we were looking at the question of how can farmers maintain the productive capacity of their soils in situations, for example, where traditional fallowing is no longer an option, usually because of population pressure increases. And so most of this research was looking at ways to integrate legumes into cropping systems, but before we looked at intercropping, we wanted to see, just get an overall picture of what are the potential of some of these legumes. And so this research was done with sole legumes planted without a cereal grain intercropped with them. And we were looking at it with the residues left on the soil surface as a way to protect the soils from the intense tropical sun. And with that, we were looking at what tropical legumes have the most potential for soil improvement. So the study was done in South Africa, just a little bit north of Pretoria. We were in a semi-arid area with the rainfall usually below 700 mils. I'll refer to growing years. Within a year, the growing season ran from about September, October to May, June. And we did have a winter dry season where it could get down to freezing. So that sometimes impacted the timing of things and when we had to make sure we got things planted before we got into the time when we could get freezes. The soil was mostly sand, a little bit of silt and clay. The pH was on the acidic side, low organic matter, low nitrates, and quite low potassium. So our treatments were two controls, a bare ground control with also a natural weedy fallow control, and then eight legume treatments. We tried a cowpea variety that we had gotten from Icrisat in Niger. Horse gram, jack bean, lab, this was the lab Highworth, lab Taua, from Niger, and then Tophrosia, sun hemp, and two types of velvet bean, a bush type and then a vining variety. So the seeds were direct sown on a 50 by 50 centimeter grid. We kind of gave it the extreme test. We didn't put any inoculation or any fertility inputs at all during the 4 years that the trial ran. Initially, we were actually only going to run it for 1 or 2 years, but it became quite an interesting trial, and so we just kept it going for as long as we had the other studies, intercropping studies, going as well. We did do some overhead sprinkler irrigation just to get the legumes up and established. But then we relied on rainfall. Some of the things we measured were above ground dry biomass, and then analyzing the nutrient concentrations within that biomass, which allowed us then to calculate accumulation. We also wanted to get an idea of the impact on the soil, so we looked at nutrients in the soil. And then one of the biological indicators we looked at was nitrogen mineralization. So I'll talk about results that we obtained with the legumes and then go into more of the soil related results. This is what the trial looked like once it got up and going. You can see the legumes did actually do quite well, even with no inputs. In terms of biomass, just for the sake of comparison, I've circled in green the biomass that was obtained with the weedy fallow. This was a mixture of grasses and broadleaf weeds. You can see we're getting anywhere from 3 to 8 tons per hectare of biomass with the weedy fallow. But look at the lab, as well as the tropical, the vining type of velvet bean. Both of those, every growing year, they produced as much or more biomass than the weedy fallow. So this is what a plot of the lab growth looked like. And then the picture on the right shows on a larger scale. One of the other research partners there planted a whole field of it. So you can just imagine the potential there is for obtaining a live mulch with some of these tropical legumes. This is comparing, looking at the, giving you a visual of the vine type of velvet bean on the top versus the bush type up on the bottom. Whenever we had visitors, the bush velvet bean generally created a lot of excitement because it's a nice compact growth form that would fit very well between rows of maize. But the downside is that it just doesn't produce quite the level of biomass, at least in that dry land area. We're growing it more in Fort Myers, just a little bit south of here, where we have a lot more rain, and there we do get quite a bit more canopy with the bush type. But it was interesting that the velvet bean did well in that dry land context. Normally you would think of velvet bean as a more humid type cover crop. This is one that I think has deserves a little bit more attention in the future. Maybe this is horse gram. Notice the low, dense, thick canopy that it has. Not much weed material coming up through that. The downside is the pods are very tiny, hard to harvest by hand. We got this from India. I believe there they hang the vines up, beat the vines with a stick, and then collect the beans on a sheet. All right, so we measured all of the nutrients, but I'll just focus on some of the macronutrients N, P, and K. There you'll see what we obtained with the weedy fallow in terms of nitrogen accumulation. And what I've circled in orange there are all the legumes that did as well or better in at least 3 of the 4 growing years. So cowpea, horse gram, lab, and both types of velvet bean. Notice lab, we could get 150, as much as 345 kilograms per hectare. The legumes didn't accumulate, in general, as much potassium. Lab sort of kept pace with the fallow, but generally the fallow was, you think of legumes being better at accumulating nitrogen. Phosphorus, again, lab, and both types of velvet bean accumulated as much or more phosphorus than as in comparison to the weedy fallow. All right, so we also are interested in what the impact of this was on the soil, keeping in mind that it's not just the residue at the end of the season that matters. There's also leaf litter that's falling to the ground during the season. Here I just stuck the camera underneath the canopy of a lab plot. We did look at, this is what the residue looked like on the plots going into the, sort of at the beginning of the winter dry season, and we were able to quantify that. We were getting, in that instance, we had almost 12 tons per hectare with lab, and 8 with horse gram. We did see significant gains in soil nitrate into the second growing year. Notice the green line there is with lab. The yellow is velvet bean, quite a bit higher than both the weedy fallow and the bare ground. And we should have just stopped the trial at year 2. But you can see it took a big nosedive in year three, and that happened to be the year that we got quite a bit more rain. So I know soil nitrate can be quite unpredictable anyway, but this makes me think that if you're going to use a legume for soil improvement, that you could maybe conserve some of the gains in the nitrate by combining maybe with some animal manure to help hold the nitrate against leaching, which in our sandy soil seemed to be an issue. Another way of looking at it is nitrogen mineralization. And we did see that in comparison to bare ground, both the weedy fallow residue and the lab-lab increased the rate of nitrogen mineralization. And in the last season of the study, we took some measurements with select legumes. This is the average of lab-lab, velvet bean, and cowpea, and sampled at different depths, 0 to 5, 0 to 15, and then 0 to 25 centimeters. And there's some evidence there that nitrogen mineralization is responding to the cover crop being on the surface. So you have a little bit higher rates going on at the shallower depth than at the deeper profile. Potassium always seemed to be the one element that made the most sense. Look at bare ground, it's just a steady decline over time with no inputs. You would expect that to happen, but then what was interesting is the weedy fallow. See how high that red line is above the bare ground. We did some sampling of plant tissue analysis for some of the weeds, and there was a broadleaf weed called, they called it khaki bush. It's a Tagetes minuta, I believe it is. It looked like a marigold, and it had tested really high in potassium. And so that's kind of what I think was going on. But also lab-lab and velvet bean tended to keep soil potassium at a little bit higher level than with bare ground. Phosphorus doesn't move much in the soil, so it's not too surprising that it was highest in the bare ground. But look at how statistically quite a bit lower in the weedy fallow. And all of the legumes maintained, or soil phosphorus was as high or higher than the weedy fallow with all of the legumes. So just in terms of a few conclusions then, tropical legumes did show promise as a source of organic material on dry sands, producing as much or more biomass than weeds, even with no inputs. I'm particularly thinking of lab-lab and velvet bean. Those two crops also accumulated as much or more nitrogen all four seasons in comparison to the fallow. And then left on the surface, they showed potential for stabilizing or boosting soil nitrate and potassium without reducing soil phosphorus below that with the fallow. I do want to acknowledge the Howard Buffett Foundation for their financial support, as well as all of the logistical support we needed for irrigation. They provided housing there. And then our staff, Arun Janai is here with us. And Joy and Brandon and Christopher all took time out of their lives to spend a few years in South Africa to help us with this project. And we could not have done it without an excellent team of day workers as well. Okay, I think I saw that hand first.
Varieties, do you have any information on the various varieties used? I'm especially interested in the cowpea, because I know there's lots of varieties and lots of variability in biomass.
Yes, some of the varieties we, like for the jack bean and tophrosia, we weren't able to get named varieties, but the cowpea was a variety from Icrisat. which I have the number for that.
Okay, I can email you.
But yeah.
Just another question. Did you, was all on the surface? Did you do any analysis with the incorporated to compare?
We just focused with the residues on the surface. Yes?
Did you look at the soil pH change with time?
The question was, did we look at the soil pH over time?
Yes, in relation to the phosphorus.
We did actually measure pH. It seemed like the more organic matter you have, the more the higher the pH went. It seemed to have a stabilizing effect on the as far as the acidity. Yes.
Sorry, I missed this earlier, but did you mention if these systems were tilled or not, or like were these incorporated? Or
so were these tilled or not? No, they weren't tilled.
Okay.
Just yeah.
All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm.